Some of the Spotify updates that drew the most interest were the fact that they were going to institute what they called a threshold. If you're not making 1,000 streams annually, that you will not get paid. The artists that are not getting 1,000 streams, they represent about $40 million.
Cut is king.
Esteemed independent music producer, rapper, and author.
When I saw the threshold pop up, my first initial reaction was to take my music down from Spotify. Coming from a tradition of rollout, but I figured out that the things that took off were things that I least expected. They were the things that I decided to do a day before and did it. At some point, you're gonna do all this planning to realize, throw the campaign away. But you gotta learn the rules before you break them.
I think this interview with Curtis King taught me three big lessons. You can either, number one, complain about the game. Number two, learn how the game is meant to be played by the rules. Or number three, rip up the rules and rewrite your own. And this is the story of how a Spotify policy change made him delete his entire music catalog off streaming services. And this change didn't even affect him personally, but he stood so firmly in what he believed in for DIY artists that he stopped. And he changed from being a music marketer, a YouTuber, and a mentor, and went back to his rapper and producer artist ways. This is season two of the All About the Music Industry interviews, where I'm talking with CEOs, music marketers, and experts in their field from the record label industry about how to build a dream team as a musician. I hope this conversation helps you grow. And so, rappers and producers, let's go. Curtis King. Honestly, my bro, it's an absolute honor to be speaking with you. I have so many questions about the direction that streaming is going in, your shifts in moving away and removing the music from the platform. But I think before we dive into all of that, I want to just ask you, the actual streaming model that was originally built, where consumers pay their $12.99 a month subscription and they get access to unlimited number of songs in existence. Do you think that model actually originally worked, if ever, for artists and DIYers creating their revenue share for themselves?
When it comes to consumers, I love, as a consumer, being able to have access to all the music. Like, it frustrates me now when I think about streaming in the sense of movies. I hate that I have to get four or five different subscriptions because my tastes go from Twilight Zone to Nickelodeon shows to, you know, the Wayans Brothers on HBO Plus, but that's how it's currently designed. With music streaming, that's what made it so awesome as a consumer, because it was like, man, I have access to literally any song that I want.
Mm-hmm.
There's pros and there's also cons of that as a listener. I'm not sure how many listeners are paying this much attention, because obviously I have a little bias being an artist myself, but music doesn't feel as special as it once did. Now, why is that important? Well, your urgency to get to new releases, it's not so urgent anymore, because you know that you have access whenever you want it. Even when it comes to who you get your subscription through, it's just like, I know for me, it probably was just a matter of which one was the cheapest. It wasn't even about sound quality when I first made the initial decision. Who has the full catalogs? What's the cheapest? And that changes your expectations upon new artists. So as it's currently designed, I don't think it was ever designed to be something that benefited the artists first. I think it was always about who has vested interest in it. Who are the investors? Who are the major labels? Who are the labels that are conducting business and are able to even be in the room, right? Who's able to have that conversation when Steve Jobs comes to the table and says, look, guys, I think I've solved this thing. Here's what I'm presenting to you with iTunes.
Yeah.
As much as visionary as he is, and I love researching that man. I love every movie I can get to about Steve Jobs. That's the person that was elected to start the conversation. And when it was had with the labels, that's awesome. But I do feel like there should have been more artist representation. I don't know who was in that room, but based upon the result of what came out, doesn't seem like there was a lot of artist input. Or at least the artist did not know what this would actually look like in a few years. And I'm going to guess who could really predict that except for the accountants and those who know.
The other thing, hugely important point, is off the back of piracy, the streaming platforms made the revenue share idea. And I think in calculating what we can afford to pay artists, I think they made themselves rich while keeping us poor.
Oops.
And now as they're running out of money, they're panicking, because they don't never anticipated how many streams artists would accumulate that they'd have to pay out of their bottom line. I know we were going to get into this in a lot of details, but let's start at the top. Like, do you think Spotify is always recording record-breaking years? Why are artists staying so poor?
No, they're, you know, there are a lot of businesses that operate at a win-loss. They talk about how, you know, they're not making profit year by year. I actually believe it, though. You know, here's a few issues I have. Let me break this whole thing down, right? When it comes to Daniel Ek, the CEO, when you start to do a little bit of digging, right, and thank God for the chat GPTs with sources now, right, because you can really dig through in a way that you never did before. When you talk about two names, Daniel Ek and you talk about Ludwig, these names are very important because these names established a little platform, I say that loosely, called uTorrent. For those who were in that piracy age, I'm not proud to say it. You understand what uTorrent was. Yes, it was a client. It was a software that had other functions and had other goals. However, there were many people who were using it to basically trade and distribute music illegally, movies illegally. I've watched a ton of movies because of that platform. And whether or not the CEO, who, if you didn't know, Daniel Ek of Spotify now, they were benefiting off of that. How can you say they were benefiting off of it, Curtis? Because they did so well that they were able to sell that business to BitTorrent. And I believe, don't quote me on it, but go look at this up. I think Daniel Ek was able to walk away with $13 billion. Remember the name Ludwig? Ludwig was the one that actually founded and created the actual software. Now, why are those names important? Because now Daniel Ek is the CEO of Spotify, you know, the one in charge of making a whole lot of decision making for what's fair for artists, someone who's benefited off of the piracy to begin with. Another story for another day. Ludwig was brought in as the head of programming initially with Spotify. So when I saw that and I started to let my brain go in the direction of, if Ludwig was the head of programming, you mean to tell me two people who benefited off of piracy that put us in a situation to begin with are in charge of the decision-making of things like the algorithm that suggests your music, the playlists that pick up on your music because it's doing some motion? They're in charge of the analytics. And then zoom out from a business that did so well with uTorrent. They understand that as a startup, they understand as a business in general, nobody survives as a business without emails, customer data. When's the last time you were able to pull off an email off of Spotify?
Isn't it crazy? Isn't it crazy?
You talk to any business out here, they cannot survive without an email list at the very bare minimum. But they treat artists like they're not real businesses because a lot of artists, we're partly to blame. A lot of us don't take our business serious. A lot of us do take shortcuts. I think a lot of artists fight me on this whole streaming thing because they're like, I don't want to have to do the work of creating a booklet. I don't have to take a photo shoot for this. I just want to be able to take a few selfies, put my album up, and then like go to sleep, take a nap because I've been in the studio all night. But it's like, okay, that's cool, but you don't want to do business. Yep. You want somebody to employ you and do the business for you.
Actually, I'm going to jump in there because I call that the SoundCloud mentality, because there was that golden era, 2010 to 2014. I was part of it myself. I was DJing a lot. I was working with a project at the time. And there was this culture of you'd upload a song, go to sleep, wake up, 20,000 plays.
Yeah.
And it did the work for you. You had a couple of homies repost you, and then the algorithm was so powerful, you'd refresh and the numbers would move.
That is awesome.
People want that in 2024. It's just not going to happen. You wake up on 10 plays the next morning.
But once again, I like to see the duality in anything. I don't think about that. I'm just like all about absolutes. I want to be able to learn something and sponge something up that helps me to further evolve my way of thinking. I love the fact that SoundCloud. I love the fact that SoundCloud happened the way it did because that was really in the rebellious nature of punk rock, the rebellious nature of hip hop, where it's like, man, forget your highly produced HD photos. I'm just going to take this abstract meme or this abstract photo and I'm going to slap it together. And from here, I'm going to put up this song that may or may not be mixed. And you're just going to have to deal with it. Like there's a certain like rebellion that I can for sure get with. However, there's a price when you're shortcutting. There's a price when you're just, I'm doing it for the love. I'm doing it just for the culture. There's a price when you only put yourself in that category and you don't figure out at some point in time, like, dog, if you don't see yourself as a business, someone who does will and will benefit more off of you than you will ever benefit off yourself. And I think that that sucks because you should benefit off of your own genius. You should make money off of your genius. But it feels like the same people now that are benefiting off of other people's geniuses are the ones that are telling people like me, man, stop pushing that agenda, bro. Like, everything's good. I know it's good because you're in their pockets and they don't know any better. So even when I left streaming, it was never about everybody come with me and do what I'm doing. No, I understand I had to walk alone on this one. I'm taking a lot of arrows all over the internet for this one. But so what? Got to do it, because if I'm always asking other people, what do you think would happen, and nobody ever does it, how will we know what would happen if I did?
One of my favorite ways to stack your streams for your entire catalog is by using a hyperfollow by DistroKid link. This is incredible. It's a link tree on steroids. You can create one overarching hyperfollow link for your entire artist profile, and then you can have all of your singles, your EPs, and your albums underneath with the relevant streaming buttons to Apple Music, Spotify, Deezer, Tidal, SoundCloud, Bandcamp, YouTube, and so many more. This is how you can turn your content into an evergreen streaming machine, because no matter which song you're pushing, your link in bio will always send them to the right song. If you want to set up a hyperfollow link and join the DistroKid family, you can get started and have a 7% discount using my link, which is distrokid.com/VIP/allaboutHelping. Huge love to DistroKid for sponsoring season 2 of this podcast and really empowering smart artists to digitally transform their campaigns. Bro, I had so much respect for you when I saw you were willing to fall on your sword. And I agree with what you said. Not once did the words ever leave your lips, and you should leave too.
Right.
You literally, and I want to get into your motivation, your rationale, and your intention behind leaving, but actually it was, it's not serving me, it's not affecting me, but because I believe so much in the DIYers, and I'm not going to use the word bottom feeder because I don't vibe with that term, but I do understand the artists were not getting the payout, and I want you to explain it properly.
Sure.
But it didn't affect you, but you still felt so strongly that you took action. So can you start at the beginning for me, please?
Sure.
Spotify made the threshold announcement. Go into that, please. And then explain what you reactionary felt off the back, if you don't mind.
So to give a little context, on my YouTube channel, I pivoted from doing tutorials years and years ago to eventually this last year doing reaction videos where I see hip-hop news and I give my 20 years plus of experience insight on the things that I see, some of the nuance that people may miss, and I try to explain and elaborate on that. Part of the reaction videos I did was on everything that was happening with the updates with Spotify. Now, some of the Spotify updates that drew the most interest were the fact that they were going to institute what they called a threshold. What we came to find out is that it's basically a sales quota. Somebody said it the other day, and I was like, that's really interesting to look at it that way. They basically said, hey, artists, I know that you signed up with us and saw that, you know, you'll make a certain amount of money for a certain amount of streams, but at least you'll get whatever was promising at 0.003. What they said is, I think that we should institute a 1,000 stream threshold. And if you don't reach that threshold, plus a crazy amount of variance to how you can even, like, they've even finessed that as well. It's not as straightforward as just get 1,000 plays. They've made it to where you can have a combination of 1,000, you can have a combination of 500 in one month and another month and still not see what they promised. But basically they created a threshold that said, if you're not making a 1,000 streams annually, that you will not get paid. Now, the artists that are not getting 1,000 streams, they represent about $40 million. What Spotify decided, instead of giving more money to the artists that deserve it, they decided, how about we just take that $40 million from what you guys would probably consider bottom feeders, and we just divide that up against the pie and pay you guys more. Well, of course, many artists jumped up and said, hell yeah, I want to get paid more, because it's capitalism. Folks feel like, hey, you know, I am more serious than them. Plus, when you get 1,000 streams, what are you making, like $3 or $4? The funny thing about that argument is that it's only $3 or $4 because Spotify established that payment system. Yet and still, we go and criticize people who are native. I get 1,000 plays. I get 1,000 streams when I was streaming. It's easy. That's nothing. That's first hour, second hour. It doesn't affect me, at least in the sense that it does artists that are trying to establish, trying to figure out how to get some seed money, figuring out how to build the first stages of their startup. And now you're taking away and creating a sales quota. They say, well, what's the difference between that and how YouTube has a partner program? Well, YouTube, when they first started presenting the partner program, they already had some pretty solid rules. This is what you need to do. You got to get this amount of hours. You got to get this. And then they started to shift and make minor adjustments. But in the very beginning, it was pretty straightforward when they had a partner program. Spotify just decides to do this. I don't know how many years they're in business and say, hey, let's switch it now. And I think that that's supremely unfair to a lot of up-and-coming artists who you already don't give them access to their listeners. All them listeners that folks be having, like, you already don't give them access to it to even keep the contact warm, to even follow up with these folks. And now you're going to take away the dollars that are still theirs, that if you have a bunch of songs still equal out to something that they get from their music, and tell them now you have a sales quota. Whenever you're given a sales quota, that means you're working for someone else. I did a bunch of reaction videos, and in real time, if you go back to those videos, anything that has Spotify, you see me, like, in real time looking at this, because I'm reacting to stuff I haven't pre-filtered. I'm just watching it with everybody else. And when I find out something, I'm like, can you guys believe this? Mm-hmm. And around the last video that I started reacting to, I was like, you know what? I'm taking my music off of stream. I've done enough research. Like, I was watching videos on Prince and when he did it in 2015. But yeah, initially I was like, let me just say this. When I saw the threshold pop up, my first initial reaction was to take my music down from Spotify. And then I started to look into things like Deezer and a lot of these other, and I said, you know what? I just want to separate myself completely from it. So I removed all my music I had a song with 500,000 streams. I had songs with 50, I had a bunch of different streams that if it was just about the vanity statistics, I would have never done that, but I did it. And when I did that, it's a lot of support, a lot of hell that broke loose. So,
yeah, I saw it all. I watched that whole interview with DJ Payne and Dame as well. I was like, oh, I don't know if I can side with those guys as legendary as they are. But I applaud your decision. Like, as we're going back to, it didn't affect you. You had met that threshold. But because you championed the DIYers and, you know, you've been an advocate for them, you're like, it doesn't sit right with me. And then I want to really, because I know the story you've told about being unable to remove your likeness from Spotify and the resistance they gave you, the representatives who are just not being helpful, yet for the R. Kellys of the world and the Triple X's of the world, they can delete them in a heartbeat. What did you do? The cover banner, tell the story if you don't mind. I'd love to hear from your words, please.
Well, just to clarify, the whole R. Kelly and Triple X Tentacion, they never deleted their accounts, but they removed them from, like, the main sources of their streams, which were the playlist, right? So they got removed. That was something I had to clarify and understand, like, okay, that's not what happened. But still, you have the control to remove things. I know you have the coders in there or somebody in there to delete my profile down there. So what I said to Spotify, initially when I took my music down, I was expecting that there was a delete button in the Spotify for Artists platform, right? That is like the behind-the-scenes dashboard that artists sign into whenever they want to, like, see their analytics and everything except for emails. And so I signed in looking for a delete button. It wasn't one. Hit up customer service. I said, hey, I would like to delete my page. And at first I was talking to a bot. Then I got connected to somebody that was a human being, and they told me, that's not possible. I'm like, what do you mean it's not possible? This is my name, my likeness, my photo. What do you mean you can't remove me off of your platform? You guys have a delete button. That's the first thing you install. Where's Ludwig at? and they told me, no, this is not something we can do. And then it started to make me think about the terms of service and how that's why it's important to read through it, because what happens with these companies is that I think the real reason why they don't want to delete your profile is so that they can go to their investors and say, we have this amount of members.
Yep.
And to try to use that as leverage to get more funding. And so even if you are an absent artist on their platform, you're still amongst the however hundreds of thousands they can say they have, right?
100%.
And that pissed me off because I'm like, that's my likeness. And if I don't want to be a part of that, what other system allows that to happen? Like, if I want to get rid of my MailChimp account, they ain't going to keep my likeness up there. Like, I'm gone. It's good. It's business. But it's so different here. So I said, all right, well, I'm going to do what creatives do. I'm going to use that banner space that usually artists use to put up like really produced photos or promo banners. And I said, I'm going to put a letter in there. And in that letter, it's going to be addressed to the DIYers. And I'm going to say specifically, I'm leaving because I don't want to take the money that is owed to you. I'm not one of those artists that are like, man, doggy dog, you either get it. I'm not one of those. I want to get your coins. Mind you, I've already had a problem with Spotify's pool system. Well, if people don't know about that, do some research with the pool system. I'll give you an example. You could listen to my music, right? So basically, Spotify has a pool system that says you could listen to Curtis King's music, let's say 500 streams you give me, and it accounts for $10. Their pool system says I will only probably see about $2 to $3 of that money, and the seven is going to go to whoever represents who has the most streams on the platform. So you could say I listen to Curtis King, I don't listen to Drake or Taylor Swift. They're still getting paid more off of my music than I am.
Yep. To me, that's one of the fundamental things that's wrong with streaming, because instead of the revenue going directly to the artist you listen to, it goes to the pool and then gets divvied up by volume of streams. And
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Like, and you brought up the conversation with Dame and DJ Payne, and I don't know how anybody who champions artist rights, champions the ability for artists to monetize in whatever ways possible that are appropriate for their specific business model, can stand on that shit.
If you feel ready to monetize your fan base, but you don't yet know how to build one, then I'd be delighted to welcome you inside the 100K Hitmaker community. This is a mastermind of rappers, singers, and even some managers across all different genres, from rap to reggaeton, to country, to metal, to house music. And I teach these artists social media storytelling tactics that grow their streams of their music. And this is done entirely organically without any paid ads. That I teach you the different content ideas that tell a story to your audience. And through this method, you begin to stack your catalog of streams. Not just getting one tune to hundreds of thousands of plays, but consistently building brick by brick to grow a catalog of multiple songs to multiple 10,000s of streams. And when you do this consistently, you start to unlock a predictable revenue payout from Spotify. And I'd be delighted to help you inside this community. Hit the link below to find out more about the 100K Hitmaker community, and I'd be delighted to welcome you in and coach you every single week.
Facts.
Honestly, I think I do want to now start talking about Storm Symphony, because that rollout to me was like a one of zero, right? That was such a unique rollout in my eyes. I want to dive into even.biz. I also would love for you to really talk about that candidness and the transparency. What I really loved, it was you were so upfront with saying it would have taken me this many streams to accumulate this much of a bag. And what I love is that's almost like a middle finger to the industry to be like, look how your system is broken. My 100 true fans, my 1,000 super fans,
right,
really support the art, including your boy here on this channel. But I think that's hugely important. And then segue into the bonuses and what each of them were. The USB, I have 100 questions about this. So
oh, yeah,
take it from the top. Where did you learn about direct consumer marketing? Was it from LaRussell? And just roll with it, please, bro.
So I initially heard the term when it came to music from Nipsey Hussle first. When you started to see the Proud to Pay campaign, when you started to see the run he went on with marathon with Mailbox Money. And we started to see all these things. He's talking about pay what you want. These are very new concepts. In fact, they were so new that he received a lot of ridicule when he initially did it, when he put out the $100 album and eventually the $1,000 album. This idea of the way that Nipsey countered the streaming era wasn't to say this is unfair, we need to come together as a union. He said, no, I'm just going to figure out how to create experiences that you cannot stream. So what he would start doing is saying, if you buy this $100 album, of course you're going to get the album. The album, in terms of just the worth of the jewel case and all that, it's not $100 worth of creation. However, the value that this music brings you, plus the fact that by buying this album, you get a ticket into a free show, right? Exclusive ticket, VIP. You also, probably for some of those folks, they were able to either talk to him one-on-one or go into a studio session with him. Think about now that he has passed away, how much more valuable that experience is to them, to say that they were there to see possibly even some records that ended up on Victory Lap. So he created experiences that you cannot stream. So many other bonuses, I think that even involved merchandise. To me, that's doing business. That is not coming up with the crazy campaign. That's doing business. It's no different than when you got the local sandwich spot that is telling you, hey, if you buy this sandwich before this hour and happy hour, you'll also be able to get this is how you conduct business. You find strategic ways to present more value for what people normally pay a certain price for. Nipsey did that initially. And when he did it, I was so inspired that I created a $100 box. And I was so scared to do this, but I had this custom game box in which I put a map of the city that I was representing in the IE. It had all of my CDs at that point. I think it was like 5 or 6 CDs. Had a DVD of all my music videos, interviews, all that stuff. It had a pair of socks with my logo on it. And I said, it's $100. I made 15 of them and only sold one. But I put it out there, and Respect Magazine picked it up in a blog post, and Nipsey retweeted it. And it was one of the moments where I was like, I feel seen, and I also feel like there's something here that I want to continue to learn from him. Now, fast forward, I had already been an independent artist and had tried many different things in my career that were outside the box. And in meeting LaRussell last year, to give further context, I took a 9-year pivot, right, over the last 9 years into content creation. And that was kind of my unique offering, in that I would provide value. And in providing this value to people, I could also at some point in time jab, 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 and right hook and say, hey, have an album. Would love for you to pre-order it. In exchange, I will give you things like my courses. I'll give you beats if you're a rapper. I'll, basically things that were normally $100 and over, I'm going to give you that for the price of a pre-order, which is $5.99. So I had already been doing this model years and years before. That model worked so well for a project that I had called Jubilee Year that it was the number 3 album on the hip hop iTunes charts. First time I did this model, I said, let's try it again. Did it again. It was number 3 again. Mind you, this is like right there in the midst of Drake's Views. This is right there in the midst of Kendrick Lamar's To Pimp a Butterfly, I believe is the name of the project at that point. Then the third time I did it was for a project called DIY 2 in 2022. We went number 1. Wow. So this happened way before I even met Even. So I didn't even know that there was already a business that was building and Even that basically has this structure in place and they automated. Before them, I was sending out weed transfers to every person that emailed me and said, here's my screenshot of your project I pre-ordered. Cool. Is what you want? All right, bae. I'm going to send it over to you. I'll send in stems. And it was such a tedious process, but I was so excited that I was seeing people buying these pre-orders that kept me going. Even basically said, we're a one-stop shop that allows you to put up your rewards here. And once people make the purchase, they can pay what they want, which is something I did not have because obviously it was restricted to whatever the price of iTunes would dictate for an EP. But it was pay what you want. And they approached me around a few weeks before I actually put out the project. We talked about it, thought it would be a great partnership with that. And I offered them even more rewards. So their platform that's basically structured it to where they offer rewards for people who are willing to buy the music. So once again, I had courses. I had the instrumental version of this project that I just did called Storm Symphony. I had the melodic loops that I chopped up from my guy, Aaron Barber, that I collaborated on this with. I had my FL Studio beginners course, my FL Studio sampling course, basically everything that you would ever need if you want to make music, rescore the project, all that good stuff. Did all that. And in our partnership, within a week, we did about $3,000 worth of sales. And mind you, eventually it got up to 4,000, right? Off of only 137 people, which is phenomenal. Because what that means is that you have things happening, like 8 people buying my project for $100 or more.
The Nipsey Hussle effect, yeah.
I never saw myself having that happen. But because this movement was so strong, because so many people understood where I was coming from, and not just fellow artists, but also my peers who are businessmen and businesswomen that said, no, you have to win. Because you winning in this moment is a win for us, because it shows what can be done when we choose to go direct to consumer. When we choose to say, you know what, I'm not going to use this payment gateway. I'm not going to use what everybody tells me I need to use. I'm going to try something different. And if it works for me, mission accomplished. But I think the issue in hip hop is that sometimes, and maybe it's just an issue with every genre, but I can just speak for my genre, is that up and coming artists and even a lot of established artists, they're looking for a model that everybody agrees upon.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like everybody wants to get around a fire that's already going so that they can say, like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, who was the first one? I'm going to say I was the first one to make this up. Like, they're looking for community in it. And I understand there's nothing wrong with community, but the issue is that when you decide to do something that is following on your vision, whenever you're given a vision, you're burdened with the responsibility of seeing it through. Not your friend, not your peers, not anybody you look up to. I told LaRussell that I was going to do this. He laughed in my face on an interview, right?
And his heart supported you, but his head was thinking about the back.
He's thinking about the back. I don't say that with any disrespect at all, because I love that dude. And you understand how I feel in that moment, where I'm like, damn, this is like me being vulnerable about I'm taking a chance on something to see if it works for me. And he busted up laughing.
He did.
And it's one of the things where it's like, ooh, damn, I got to take this, because this is a part of, this is my fault. I took this chance. Even folks like my former manager had many conversations with him where he's like, this just doesn't make any sense to do this. Because when you think about restaurants that are the most annoying, you think about, you know, like say like the hood Chinese food spot. You go to that spot and they don't have, they don't accept credit card. It's only cash. Can you think about how inconvenient that is? And at the moment, I was like, yeah, that's true. He's like, that's what you're doing when you take it off of streaming. I said, yeah, that's true. Then I gave it some more thought and I was like, but when I'm hungry and I want that food, I will take whatever steps necessary. Oh, there's an ATM next door? Okay, bet, I'll be back. Because it's only a moment in that time. So my thing was, I'm just sick and tired of being, how can I put this? I got to a point where this idea was so strong in my system before I actually did it, I couldn't sleep. It almost felt like Prince was waking me up in the middle of the night and said, the revolution is starting, Curtis. You ready? I could not sleep because I was like, man, and whenever something is that strong, I'm going to do it. Stupid or not, I have to do it. I did it. It's something that worked so well. Off of 137 people who basically bought an album that was predominantly instrumental, only 3 songs, that showed me a whole lot about what the future may hold if I really hone in. You talk about this album having a rollout plan. Bro, this was no there was little to no strategy except for this is what we're doing this week. And it's not that I was falling off on a whim. I have much experience in this, but I also recognize that you can plan for things and that other variables are going to pop up that you have to react to and be ready for. I just said, at the very bare basic, this is what I'm going to stay consistent about.
I want to challenge that. Homie, I want to challenge that. I have to call you out on that. I think there was no predetermined strategy, but I think you're self-aware enough and you're smart enough that you were basically tweeting in real time. And every thought that was coming to mind was being surfaced to community. And you have a sizable audience, and all you were doing were making them aware of the moment in the process you were at. And I think each person who Again, right. Saw the thread of Spotify reaction videos, saw the thread of tweets, start going, this dude's onto something. And it would have been far too easy for you just to go, damn, I tried even, it wasn't all that, you know, it didn't really make the most on day one. I think it's persistence. And I go back to the candidness and the transparency that you were so aligned with your philosophy and your decision that you're like, I will do whatever it takes to make this work. So I don't think it was strategic, but I think it was honest. And I want to make that clear.
You know,
my observation of your campaign.
No, and I appreciate you clarifying that. I just want to make sure that people understand that I come from a tradition of album campaigning. That's my favorite part of anything that I'm doing is the campaign. How, like, when I think of concept, I don't think of the word concept. I think of the word message. What is the message that I'm going to relay? When I think about brand, I think about reputation. There's a book called Seducing Strangers. It's a prime marketing book everybody should get into, especially artists. But they talk about replacing those words so that it inspires new ideas. What I'm saying is coming from a tradition of rollout, 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 what I figured out is about 80% of what I planned went under different circumstances. Mm-hmm. And the things that I thought were going to be the most important parts of that campaign weren't the most important part. The things that took off were things that I least expected. They were the things that I decided to do a day before and pivot. When I pulled that audible and said, you know what? I'm not going to put up this. I'm going to put this up instead. It's not in your rollout. I'm just going to see what it does. It was those moments that created new information that pivoted things. So I want to be transparent about that. I'm not saying that people should not have a plan going into it, but I'm saying at some point you're going to do all this planning to realize, throw the campaign away, but you got to learn the rules before you break them. So I have done this so many times that I got to a place now where I'm like, my issue, my wife has told me this, is over-strategizing.
Yeah.
So to challenge that and challenge myself, I said, I'm going to have at least these basics. We're going to make reels. We're going to have snippets that are the most engaging. They're going to all look cinematic. I'm going to make sure the copy stays consistent. The captions stay consistent. I'm going to also make sure that I keep this conversation going because I'm naturally already thinking about, I can't think of anything else right now except for these things that I'm figuring out about streaming. I'm going to keep that conversation going. But to me, if I were to put that into a PDF, this whole campaign would have looked so much more, it'll look too produced. And for me, if I don't feel it, that's the part of me that's an artist. Marketing is an art for me too. If I can't feel the things that I am promoting and saying, I have detachment. And that's when I end up giving up on a project's campaign because it's like we hit the check marks and now let's get into phase three. I can't do it like that.
I think for me, the live album experience, that to me was phenomenal. You took your house, you took a couple of plants, you took some beautiful lighting, some cinematic lights and all of that, and you made a phenomenal piece of art. And that was like a pleasure to watch. And I was vibes into the whole thing, not on the real-time stream because of the time difference, but the next morning. And I was snapped. He decorated a room in his house. And it's his pod studio and now his performance studio. It's his pagoda of the La Russell era in his own house, you know?
Well, I was going to say, it wasn't in this room. It was downstairs in
we were
a separate room downstairs that we were just using to put, like, books in. Like, it was like our study. But I was like, if I gut this out and actually do things here, I could at least make content. It went from I could make content after going to go visit La Russell, and I'm like, no, we could have shows here and put these up live and make them look really good.
Uh-huh.
But what people don't recognize is that when I say DIY, like I had to learn how to utilize lighting in a different way. I had to go, not had to, I got to have the opportunity to get my Skillshare courses and dig into cinematic lighting, dig into why you put the camera on the opposite end of the lighting and why that creates something with the use of practicals, how that creates depth of field, the f-stop and how that, like I did all these things in steps so that I could do this. But I'm going to tell you this, at the beginning of this project, when I first said, hey, this is what's going out, I didn't know what this show was going to look like. I didn't know I was going to have a show because it was an instrumental album. Originally, I was going to be like, let's just put it out there and let's stay consistent about these bare bone things. And in the midst of it, something will come up. somebody will, some random stuff is going to happen that's going to say, okay, now let's pursue this. And to me, that is one of the most important skill sets anybody in marketing could ever have, is the ability to stay loose and pivot, because things happen so quickly on the internet to where it's like, oh, this is now going viral. We need to capitalize upon this moment because there's a lot of eyes that are coming to the landing page or they're coming to the website. And so I had to stay flexible. I had to stay flexible. The show wasn't even an idea. Originally, I was going to try to see if I can do this in an actual like venue. And then it started getting to the close to the date. And I was like, I'm telling you, bro, the week of the show, Monday, the show was on a Friday. The Monday, I was thinking about so many different things about how like people were getting their stuff delivered when they went up to even. I didn't even know what the show was going to look like until Thursday. And I'm not encouraging anybody to operate the way that I do. I'm just saying in the crazy chaotic space, the crazy chaotic world of Curtis King, I've done this so long that I have the ability to pivot like that.
Thanks.
But what I'm saying is that sometimes we overplan ourselves out of greatness.
Yeah. My wife says the same to me. She's like, you leave everything to the last minute. And I always say, but pressure creates diamonds.
It does. Best
works comes under duress.
Yeah, sometimes it creates headaches, because I know during the show, man, there was times where I was like, I look like the guy that you see in all the cartoons where it's like the one man band. He's walking down the street and he's like playing the drums and it's like he has the horn and he has the, like, that was me. During the set, you see me sitting down and there's a table in front of me and I have the laptop with the show. People don't recognize the phone has the chat that I'm paying attention to. The laptop has OBS, which is opening, which I'm changing angles and I have all this video going. The bottom of the table has a smoke, a fogger button that I'm triggering. So it's like I have to find harmony and flow in all of this. I mean, I'm hitting the tambourine and I still got to remember my lyrics.
That's the definition of a true DIY artist then. That's what it is, because it's easy to pay a team who are specialists in the areas and you end up blowing through a whole lot of budget. And what I love about the way you operate is it's all in-house. It's all hustle. It's all scrappy.
But it's gotten so loose now with the title. The barrier of entry is so low. Your favorite TikToker, your favorite streamer can be a rapper tomorrow just because they released a song and they can do tons of streams. And then they can look at the other artists who have already established careers and say, hey, we're on the same level. Or you know what? Actually, I'm more important because I have 5 million listeners. It's a very dystopian, very weird world sometimes, but it's also really amazing because I, as an independent artist that is very savvy in the digital space, very savvy in the internet space, very savvy with graphic design, all these different aspects, I can take advantage of this. Mm-hmm. I've had videos that went supremely viral on TikTok and Instagram doing things that have nothing to do with my rapping, but brought attention to my rapping.
Yeah. J.R. McKee's done the same. J.R. McKee goes viral for Family, and that pushes his PR business. Like, I get it. You got to play the game the way that the game is designed to be played. Yeah,
but for me, this is not. To me, it's not about. For me, like, I understand what you're saying when you're saying playing the game, but it's not even about, like, because I think that discourages a lot of folks who are my age, because they're like, I don't want to play the game. I don't want to do the dances. And it's like, dog, when you realize your best rollout campaign is not about the game you're playing. Yep. It's not about a game. When you start realizing that this is genuinely about, this is on my mind. These are the mediums that I feel would be best to share these ideas on. Like I said, this is the first time that I didn't have a rollout plan. I was just telling the truth.
Love.
And it felt so freeing because everything that I did was like, of course it was, of course that works. Because I meant it when I said it. I felt it when I said it. You know what I'm saying? Like, what's the best? You know, you ever see where somebody is doing like different takes of like shooting a video and somebody's like, no, I just don't feel you. I don't believe you. Well, you don't believe it because they don't believe it.
Yes.
So when I'm doing these campaigns, when I'm doing these shows, these are all extensions of my truth. And if I think about a game, that detaches me from my truth. So I know what you're saying in the context you're saying it, but I'm like, that's also, I think it, I'm very careful about the power of words, because there's certain words that I like to trigger a certain line of thinking that makes folks feel like, oh, so he has a system. You got any courses that I can learn that system from? No, I don't have that because I'm learning it myself. Rick Rubin, last thing I'm going to say, Rick Rubin said something in his book, The Creative Act, that I thought was really brilliant, in that too many people talk about the genius of what they thought of and what led to an idea. The reality of it is none of us know. None of us know how we got to where we got to. We have no idea how the breakfast we did or didn't have that morning led to the decision-making we made in traffic, led to us being a certain amount of energetic or a certain amount of lethargic that led to us being in a studio session. We don't know the temperature of the room and how that had an effect on the art that we created, right? There's so many elements that go into it, and we're not even talking about the art itself. And then we get in these interviews and podcasts and say, yeah, I kind of knew it was something when I started picking that snare. I just knew people were going to resonate with this. You don't know nothing. The people choose us. We don't have control over whether or not they choose us. The people, we put it out in the world. We promote it the best we know how, but people are still making conscious decisions to engage with it, to purchase it, to stream it, whatever the case may be. And I think sometimes we operate like we have a lot more control over people than we actually do. And when you let that go and you just recognize, hey, I'm telling troops, it can be strategic, it can be planned, but you're telling your truths. I just feel like nowadays people don't want more influencers. They want people who do this to talk about the thing that they're doing.
Facts. My bro, I'm literally on chapter 7 right now of Rick Rubin's book, so I can't wait to finish it. Absolutely loved this from the bottom of my heart. You are, like I said, an inspiration, a legend in the game. You are setting the footsteps that I believe artists need to pay attention to and tread a couple steps behind you as you're working it out. They should be trying to maneuver in the way to take their art seriously as a business for themselves rather than just being hobbyists. There's nothing wrong with that, but I feel like if you're going to put such effort into thing, it can be a viable way to feed your family. And I think you're living proof of that in the way that you're standing up for the philosophy you believe in to such an extent that you would do a drastic decision against the grain, but that everyone now says he's onto something and he is a true DIYer for this generation. So love, bro.
Look, shout out to Hit-Boy and his posse, man. His Hit-Boy, you know, his posse Big Hit just released a project and they didn't go to streaming first and went direct to consumer through a Bandcamp, right? So it's like, I don't need the credit, but when you see the ripple effect, you see Snoop Dogg talking about the $45,000 that he got from the billion straight, like, I don't need the credit. I just need folks to understand that I went my own route. When I'm trying these things to see if they work for me, when I got this USB card that, you know, it's like a business card that people are now paying what they want, the average person is paying off $75 that has my whole catalog. It has, you know, my audio book. It has all these different things on it, my documentaries. I don't have somebody that I can go to help me with this blueprint. And in the same way that I may be an inspiration to someone else, that idea that you got bubbling in your brain, you got to trust that at some point in time, and you got to try your own things, because you may come across a thing one day, you're going to if you keep pursuing, that may not work for the majority of people, but it was designed for you. And if you can figure out what works for you, this is going to sound really, really selfish, fuck everybody else. Figure yours out. And if people have questions about how you did it, don't present it as this is the way to do it. Present it as this is how I did it. Alex Hormozi talks about this. It's not about making how-to content. It's about people want how I content. How did I do it? So in that sense, I think that my ideas are my ideas. If you resonate with them, try them out. Try the shoes on. See if it fits. If it does, cool. If it doesn't, you keep pursuing those ideas that you have, because you're going to come across something one day that I may look at and be like, that's interesting. I want to try that out. But I'm telling you right now, we're in that age where if you don't experiment and don't trust your ideas, 10 years from now, you're going to look back and realize this is the easiest time it ever was. And you're going to be pissed off that you didn't even try. Do it.
Bruh, you've dropped hundreds of gems. Again, I'm grateful. Where can people connect with you across your pod, across your socials? How can they get in touch if they want to watch the reaction content, your courses and all of that, please?
So I removed all my courses. I removed all the stuff that put me in a category of teacher. I made it really easy for you. CurtisKing.com has not only my music, but it's connected to my YouTube. It's connected to my merchandise, my book, these USB drives, which we're almost down to, I think, two more. But CurtisKing.com has all the information. Curtis King TV is my YouTube. Curtis King on all social media is not spelled differently anywhere except for TikTok. Well, I believe it's Curtis_King. But yeah, connect wherever you want to connect. But CurtisKing.com is going to have what you need in terms of my music direct to consumer. It'll lead you to the Bandcamp. It'll lead you to even physical copies, all that good stuff. But yeah, that is where you find me. I appreciate you having me on your platform and asking such great questions that I had a lot of research put behind them, and I can tell, man, I greatly appreciate that.
Love, bro. It's not research when you just pay attention to someone you love. So that's, for me, is like, I'm a genuine
See,
fan.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. That's what I'm talking about. I said it's not a rollout campaign. When you're telling the truth, right, it's not a rollout campaign. It's like, you get it. You get it. When you've done this enough times, the structure is in your DNA. But when you've never done it, you need structure. So, man, respect to you. Salute to you. And I appreciate you, like I said, sharing me with your platform and all that good stuff. So, thank you.